and if you want to feature on your record. Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. I'm Alex Chester. Not with me as always, neither my infant son, who has done like 10 podcasts in his 8 days on earth, but not here tonight for the first time, and also not here for the first time this season, Wheels Wienerker. He did a couple of podcasts without me, and so Turnabout is fair play. I am doing a podcast without him today. It is the Philadelphia Eagles with our annual Eagles guest, Shamir Seidman. Before we get to Shamir and the Eagles, I do want to talk for just 1 second, give an update about the 32 Fans Survivor Fantasy Football League in 2020. It's the first time I've gotten really excited about football and fantasy football this year. We mentioned it in the podcast a couple of days ago, and then we put out some feelers, and we got tons of responses really, really quickly. Last year, we had four different divisions with 16 teams each, and this year, we have five divisions with 16 teams each for a total of 80, and we already have almost 16 people on a wait list, and so we might just end up squeezing in a sixth division. We'll have to figure that out. But then we started Akiva and I and A.B. Sutton, who initially introduced us to it, us along with Matt Stewart, who were the four commissioners of the four divisions last year, were in a little chat discussing what wrinkles to add to the rules from last year. And then we brought it out to the patron group chat as a whole, and people just, you know, were on fire with all kinds of really exciting ideas, which got more and more outlandish, tying in themes from Survivor and along with football. And we decided, much like Survivor, you can't introduce too many new wrinkles in one season, or much like the NFL. You really got to do like one big change at a time, because otherwise it's just going to overwhelm people with complete craziness. So we're going to have hidden immunity idols this year, and we're going to have, you can use your fab money in the auction for advantages. So we have, those are the two new wrinkles this year. Otherwise it's the same league as last year. If you're still interested, you can reach out to us. Maybe someone drops out, or maybe we do add a sixth division. So you have a few days left maybe to join us. With that having been said, now it's time to turn to the Philadelphia Eagles and our annual guest, who comes every single year to tell us why he thinks the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl this year. Always positive about the Eagles is Shamir.
Shamir, every year you are all in on the Eagles. You usually predict them to win like 13, 14, 15 games. Offline, you were telling me you're not as hot on the Eagles this year. So tell me, why are you not as optimistic this year in the preseason as you usually are?
I think last season showed me not to get too hype. You know, we had massive expectations going into the year, tons of injuries, tons of expectations not being met. So I'm trying to, you know, dial it back a little bit. I'm still confident in the team, but the division did get better. And I looked at the schedule, and got a lot of playoff teams from last year on there, but I still think they're probably the best team in the division. And I still believe 9 to 10 wins gets them a division and a playoff spot. And all you need is a ticket to the dance, as they say.
Yeah. Now, in our cumulative power rankings, we have the Eagles at 7 this year. But I should let you know that they are closer to 15 than they are to 5, because there's like a massive drop-off after the top 5. So, you know, 7. Well,
they have some question marks this year. I mean, they lost a lot of leadership. They lost a lot of players. They had, you know, there's still question marks around Alshon Jeffrey and different things like that. So I still think they're a great team. They have a lot of depth, but I would be okay with them ranked anywhere between 7th and 15th. So I think that's fair and accurate.
Okay, but you think that they're clearly better than the Cowboys. So you think they're the favorite in the division?
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys have a significant amount of offensive power, but they had that last year and did nothing with it. And they lost Gerald McCoy this week, and you know, they seem to not step up when it's needed, and they win big games early in the season. They get a lot of hype, and then it falls apart as the season goes on. Until they prove me otherwise, I'm going to continue riding with the Eagles, who have proven to be hot in December three or four of the last years and have got a Super Bowl out of that. So until the Cowboys can prove they can win in December, I'm going to be comfortable with my Eagles.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they did nothing with it. They had the third best differential in the league, in the NFC last year. They just, you know, they obviously finished 8-8 because they had a bunch of blowout victories and close losses. But
yeah. They missed the playoffs, and also they lost early in the season to, I believe, the Jets. I think they also lost to the Dolphins, if I remember correctly.
So let's start. You know, you were talking about depth. Carson Wentz. You're hoping, of course, that he plays 16 games.
Yep.
But behind him, I think you guys drafted Jalen Hurts. Like, what's the plan if Wentz doesn't play all 16 games?
Well, the depth chart showing Nate Sudfeld as the number 2 quarterback, but that's okay. not going to be the case when the season starts. I think they looked around the league, and the Eagles tend to be a little bit more progressive in terms of how they do roster construction, and they're also very happy to play the copycat role. And they saw Taysom Hill, they saw Lamar Jackson, they saw the mobile quarterback, and they said, you know what? Why don't we take a stab at Jalen Hurts? His role as you know what the organization has been saying is he's a quarterback. He's not a gadget player, but I can see them, you know, mixing him in some fourth and ones and some option reads and some, you know, especially in obvious running situations to take some of the beating off of Carson Wentz's head.
Yeah, I mean, but if he takes, you know, more than 50 snaps under center this year, that's a disaster.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, but also when Andy Reid was a coach and they brought in Michael Vick along with Donovan McNabb, they lined them both up in the backfield, and the Saints played with Taysom Hill and Drew Brees in the same, you know, backfield last year. Who knows? The truth is that if Jalen Hurts is relied upon this year, the season is a failure. So
yeah,
it's all the Eagles season starts, ends, and finishes with Carson Wentz's health and production.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, I think Wentz has developed a bit of an injury-prone reputation, but it's not really deserved. He played all 16 games last year, which I think is the second time he's done that in his four-year career. So it's basically, he misses, you know, he has the season-ending injury in the season when they win the Super Bowl anyway. So, you know, that obviously didn't harm them. And then the next year, frankly, Foles again sort of, you know, played fine and even won a playoff game in his absence. So I think it's a little bit unfair to say that, you know, Wentz's career has been defined by injuries, you know, costing the Eagles during his career.
Right. Well, the fluke ACL tear, you know, was in the Super Bowl year, and the season after that, he had a fractured back, which he actually played through. But then when the season was circling the drain, they benched him. And last year he played all 16 games. And then in the first quarter of a playoff game, he got cheap shotted by Clowney. So I don't think that's necessarily a reflection of an injury problem, but I mean, you have to stay on the field. That's it.
Yeah.
That's
let's talk about his weapons for a second. I think, you know, the Eagles have had both on the offensive and defensive lines really elite play for the last, you know, throughout the Wentz era or whatever you want to call it. And the difference in the Super Bowl year versus the other seasons was really probably their secondary and especially their wide receivers. Last year, coming into the season, I think you were very high on the wide receivers. You know, there was a lot of injuries, obviously. In week one, DeSean Jackson, as I know, I had him in fantasy. He had, you know, 9 catches, 2 touchdowns, 130 yards, whatever it was. And then he never played again.
Yep.
They had injuries to Alshon Jeffrey as well. And then, you know, by the end of the season, it was probably the worst collection of wide receivers we've seen on an NFL team, on a playoff caliber NFL team that I can ever remember.
It was a majority practice squad players.
Yeah. So you add Marquise Goodwin from San Francisco, and then you draft Jalen Reagor in the draft. Those are like two like speed guys, downfield threats.
Well, Goodwin opted out for COVID.
Oh, okay. So my information is already old. Okay, so you've lost Goodwin already. So not a good start, you know, in terms of, you know, guys dropping like last year. You still have
– Right.
Look, so if Reagor and DeSean Jackson can play 30 games combined, you still have more than enough speed on the outside.
And there's Jeffrey. And then also they took two lottery tickets at the end of the draft, both, you know, 4-2, 4-3 guys, guy Quez Watkins and the guy John Hightower, you know, one-trick ponies, but they should be able to stretch the field, you know, and – They were kind of shots in the dark. Hopefully one of them pays off. But the, you know, between last year's breakout December star Greg Ward and DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor and Alshon Jeffrey coming back potentially after a few games, I think the offensive firepower at wide receiver is definitely worthwhile and worthy, but ultimately the team is going to be relying upon Ertz and Goddard to be the number one and two options in the offense at the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you have, you know, the best tandem of tight ends, you know, if not in the league, you know, certainly up there, that can help make up for some holes at wide receiver. But they had that last year, and it wasn't enough. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, was he like a second-round pick last year, third-round pick? What was he last year?
I don't care when he was drafted. All I care about is that he was taken before DK Metcalf, and that's going to haunt me for –
Well, I mean, but that's true. Everett passed on Metcalf a couple of times, obviously. But the point is, Arcega-Whiteside sucked last year, and my team has had a lot of bad experience with first-round wide receivers as well. So, you know, you've already lost Goodwin, who was, you know, the free agent acquisition. And I just think, you know, I don't know, if you're really depending on Jalen Reagor, that might be a problem. You know, you talked about these late season flyers, but DeSean Jackson is, what, 33. So, like, who do you feel really confident running down the sideline?
Rager is the DeSean Jackson insurance policy because he's not listed as a starter when Alshon Jeffery's healthy. So he's depth.
So you just need one of them. Okay.
You just need one. He's depth. But at the end of the day, he's a first round pick and he's got, he was drafted before Justin Jefferson and before some of the other bigger names on the board because of the Eagles saw something in him that a lot of other teams didn't. He does look explosive so far, but you know, he's got a big target on his back because there was like a big three wide receivers. There was CeeDee Lamb, there was Jefferson, and there was Henry Ruggs and a couple of guys. And he was taken before a couple of them, and he was not ranked in any draft boards as higher than a bunch of those guys. And, you know, here he is, you know, with a lot of expectations, and it should be interesting.
I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, because the Vikings were drafting down to 22 and needed a receiver, I was targeting Rager because I didn't think they'd have a chance at Jefferson. And then obviously the Eagles take Rager, Jefferson drops to them. You know, to make assumptions based on, you know, pre-draft rankings is obviously foolhardy. So who knows? But, you know, all right, let's talk about it in the backfield. So Jordan Howard is gone. So you have a second year Miles Sanders. Then, of course, Boston Scott, who was like the fantasy darling late in the season.
Yeah.
And
not a lot of depth behind that. I mean, obviously, Doug Peterson historically does not give a majority of the carries to one guy. He kind of mixes it around and does a lot of running back by committees and, you know, and was putting in Darren Sproles on the goal line for years. Like he's not a conventional manager of running backs, but on paper now it seems like a fairly traditional three down back with Boston Scott mixing in as the potential third down back every so often. And the guy who can, you know, take some pressure off in the passing game. And then behind him, they brought back Corey Clement from the Super Bowl team. And they have a couple of depth guys. They got Elijah Holy from Georgia floating around. They signed him to a futures contract in January, and they took a bunch of guys in the undrafted free agent market. A guy, I think Killings Jr. was one of the fastest guys who was an undrafted player, and a couple other flyers. But ultimately, it's Miles Sanders' team, and Boston Scott is a nice piece behind him. And running backs are, as they say, a dime a dozen. So I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Boy, you really especially know this whole roster. Pretty, you're mentioning like third and fourth and fifth stringers, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. We're on vacation today, so I spent some time studying the depth chart.
Yeah, the internet connection isn't great where you are. Are you deep in the bubble? Where are you exactly?
We're out on Long Island in Southampton.
Hanging out with your cisgendered friends?
Yeah, my cisgendered friends.
Let's talk about that offensive line, which has been elite for years, is the way I was putting it. Jason Kelce in the middle, obviously, you know, as good a center as there is in the league, if not the best Kelce in the NFL. Jason Peters, the future Hall of Famer. So he's moving to guard. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then Andre Dillard is the new left tackle?
Right. So what happened was Jason Peters was told that he no longer has a role on the team. They're moving ahead with Andre Dillard and good luck. And there were a lot of rumors he was going to go to San Diego and this and that. And then a few weeks later, Brandon Brooks tore his Achilles in training and they brought him back to play guard. You know, he's a 17-year career at left tackle. This is his first time changing positions. Should certainly be interesting. And there's a lot of people who a lot of the Eagles beat writers are secretly assuming he'll end up at left tackle, but sooner rather than later at some point. And maybe they're showcasing Dillard early in the season as a potential trade piece, or they'll give him one more year to you know, refine his craft. But he's definitely a first rounder who has not lived up to the first round hype in his first few years.
Dillard, you mean?
Dillard, correct.
So he sort of was like a rotation guy last year, but he could not hold down a starting job.
And he was not a
pick last year, right?
But he was never named a starter at any point in time. He was a swing tackle, a rotation guy, but he didn't look great.
Okay, let's go to the defensive line for a second. So Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham inside, still sort of the heart of this. Well, I mean, really the entire defense, I would say.
Right, so Graham's on the outside.
Graham's the edge guy.
Yeah, Cox is on the inside, and they.
Oh, and Derek Barnett's the other edge guy, right?
Right. Yeah, right. So before
I should open up the depth chart.
Before last season, they signed Malik Jackson to be the other interior lineman next to Cox. And I think he had a Liz Frank or one of the serious foot injury in the first game of the season. But he's back and healthy now. But additionally, they signed their number one or number two free agent acquisition this past offseason was Javon Hargrave from Pittsburgh, who's a wrecking ball inside. And you put him on the same line as Cox, and neither one of them are going to be able to be, you know, you can't double team both of them. So it should certainly create opportunities for more pass rush, certainly create opportunities to wreak havoc in the backfield. I'm very excited about Eagles front, you know, the defensive front this season. It should be interesting. And they also brought back Vinnie Curry a few days ago. So they have some veterans, and they have some very talented players up front. It should be interesting. I'm excited.
Let's talk about their linebackers. So they have a lot of sort of hybrid type guys at linebacker.
The Eagles have the 32nd ranked allocation of salary cap space dedicated to linebacker in the NFL. So they don't place a high premium on it. Their number one linebacker is TJ Edwards, who was undrafted last season out of Wisconsin. Number two linebacker is Nathan Gary, who was a sixth round pick at safety 2 years ago. Now he's converted to linebacker. And then they drafted two more guys this year to play linebacker, a guy Davion Taylor out of Colorado and a guy Sean Bradley out of Temple. Both guys ran at top five 40 speed at the position for linebacker. So they're not big or they're not strong, but they're fast. So I think that's an area the Eagles were looking to target this year, is to have fast guys in the middle of the field who can cover and run around. But they're not necessarily relying on them to be thumps in the middle to stop the run game. They're looking for sideline to sideline. So it's interesting. It's a very weak group, but the Eagles typically play – they don't play in a base, and they don't really have a lot of linebackers and they have extra secondary on the field. So they don't allocate resources to – linebacker, and you know they're all a bunch of no-name guys.
So you mentioned the secondary. You know, when they won the Super Bowl, that was a real strength of the team that has, you know, taken a couple steps back the last couple of years. Yeah. Ronald Darby never really worked out there. So you made a trade for Darius Slay from the Lions. Yep. I'm looking at the depth chart now. You have Nicole Roby Coleman, who the upside, I guess, is that he doesn't, you know, ever do pass interference in NFC championships. But you know, who's starting opposite Slay?
So on paper, third rounder a couple years ago, he's a good player. They also have Sidney Jones, Rasul Douglas. So Rasul Douglas is clearly not the starter. So it's either going to be it's more than likely going to be Avante Maddox unless he gets passed in training camp by Sidney Jones. Sidney Jones has the pedigree. He was a first round talent and fell the second round because he tore his Achilles pre draft. But they have a bunch of names and a bunch of guys who on paper are good, but don't really show up. So hopefully between Slay on the other side and the improved pass rush, they can start making these guys look a little better. But Coleman should play the slot. Maddox should be on the outside with Slay. And Sidney Jones is the first guy off the bench with Rasul Douglas behind him.
Yeah, because when you're lining up...
And then a safety.
Yeah.
Hello?
Oh,
no, yeah. I was going to say, they additionally have Jalen Mills, who they converted to safety. So that's also replacing Malcolm Jenkins, who was the all-pro heartbeat of the team. Didn't miss a snap, literally miss a snap. When I say snap, played special teams and every single defensive snap for like four consecutive seasons, which is incredible. And they let him walk for some inexplicable reason and replaced him with a part-time corner to, you know, convert him to safety. I'm not really thrilled with the idea. They also brought in a guy from Denver, a guy Will Parks. So they have some players at safety, and they have some interesting players at left corner. You know, Darius Slay is the only you know, guy you can set your watch to in that secondary.
Yeah, you know, if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm looking at Week 16 going into Dallas, a game probably with the division on the line, and you got to cover Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, and then of course the Cowboys then went and spent a first round pick on CeeDee Lamb. And I'm just, you know, am I going to be confident with Coleman or Sidney Jones, any of these guys you're mentioning, covering those guys down the field? And that's, to me, probably like the place that I'm most, you know, you said they didn't really spend money on linebackers, but to me, I'm really worried about, you know, how they're going to cover all those guys, you know, against the Cowboys, for example, and then some of the other elite offenses.
That's fair. I mean, there's no good answer. I mean, most of those guys are overmatched against those guys, but who isn't? Who's second and third corner can handle CeeDee Lamb? I mean, that's a deep bunch of wide receivers.
Yeah. I mean, the Vikings have lost all their quarterbacks from last year, so I'm very nervous in the secondary as well. Let's jump. The Eagles over-under is 9.5. And ordinarily on this podcast every year, we get to the Eagles over-under, and you're shocked that it's not like three wins higher. But before we started recording, you told me you thought that was pretty reasonable. So let's jump into the schedule game and try and figure out, you know, what the Eagles' schedule is going to be, and then you'll tell me whether, you know, you would bet the over or the under at 9.5. So, again, all with the assumption that we're playing the 16 games on the schedule and that, you know, nothing gets interrupted, and that's a big if. But week one, you go to Washington. I don't know who – that team doesn't have a name. That team doesn't have a quarterback. Alex Smith is now limping around. He thinks he's coming back. I don't know what the hell's going on. So, is that a win or a loss for DeSean Jackson, who starred last year in week one against Washington?
Yeah, the Eagles seem to play the Redskins every single season, week one.
But they're not
the
Redskins anymore.
Correct. W football team. Yeah. It's a win. It's a win and it's a cover, but it's gonna probably take them a half to get going, because especially with no preseason, you know, I think it happened, but that's got to be a win.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the first 3 weeks of the season, probably the easiest part of the schedule for the Eagles. So you really want to get out to a fast start here if you have high hopes for the season. So week two, you come home, you face the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting game because the Rams are a really nice-looking team on paper, but I think the Eagles, you know, have beat them historically, and they beat them on the road also, so I think that's a win also. I think, obviously, week three with the Bengals should be a win, and I think a 3-0 start is not unreasonable.
All right, now things get a bit tougher. You go at San Francisco on Sunday Night Football in week four.
Yeah, I can't confidently call that a win. I think that's an L.
And then week five, you go to Western Pennsylvania to play the Steelers.
I'm intrigued by that game. I don't know. I haven't done too much research about the Steelers, but I feel like they've lost a lot. I think I would book that as a win also. I go to 4-1.
All right, so 4-1, and then you come home and you face the Ravens.
Yeah, I think the Ravens are going to be a freight train this year. I think that's a loss.
All right, so 4-2, and then you play a couple of home games in the division. First, on short rest, Thursday night against the Giants.
I mean, the Giants got better, but so did the Eagles. I think the Eagles are going to sweep the Giants this year, and they're going to split with the Cowboys. So I think I'm going to flip the schedule this year. I'm going to have the Eagles losing at home and winning in Dallas. So I'm going to go to 5-1 and then 5-2.
Well, no, they're 4-2 when they lose to the Ravens. So then they beat the Giants, they're 5-2. And then you said Sunday Night Football, they lose at home to the Cowboys. So
yeah,
they're
5-3. Going
so 5-3 coming into the bye. You said they sweep the Giants, so then they're 6-3 after the bye. Yep. And then they go at Cleveland in week 11.
Yeah, that's a win.
All right, so 7-3. And then you play on Monday night at home against Seattle.
They can't beat the Seahawks. They never beat the Seahawks. Freaking Russell Wilson has got their number. I'm going Seahawks there.
Yeah, I mean, other than the Giants game, you know, the schedule gets really tough at this point. Then you go at Green Bay the next week.
Yeah, that's a tough game. I mean, they won Green Bay last year on Sunday Night Football. That was a miracle. But I don't see them repeating that.
All right, so 7-5, and then you play the Saints in week 14.
So the Eagles had a weird history against the Saints. They seem to always lose to them, but I like them at home here, but it's really a coin flip for me. The Saints are tough, and they have an explosive offense, but I don't know. I'll give that a win, but I'm not feeling great about it.
All right, so that's a big win because you're 8-5. You go at Arizona in week 15.
Yeah, traveling across the country. You know, they got Hopkins and Kyler Murray. I mean, I don't know. I'd go lost there. It's tough to travel and play on the West Coast.
All right, so now you're 8-6. Week 16 at Dallas. What is the Cowboys' record in week 16?
Yeah, this is for the division.
All right. Now, again, there are three wild cards this year, but the NFC is pretty deep, so there's no guarantee, especially if you lose, you drop to 8-7. But you have said that after having lost at home before the bye,
this is the revenge game. I'm having them win out here.
Okay, yeah. So a big win, 9-6, and then you come home, you finish it how you started against the W's.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that you know, one of those Giants games could be a loss, and they could also win, you know, one of the Packers or Seahawks or, you know, or one of my losses. Yeah, I'm somewhere in 9-7, 10-6 range. I mean,
So then would you bet the over or the under, or you're staying away at 9.5?
I'd probably go under. I'd probably go under. It's a weird season, and especially if they can sneak in at 9-7, you know, they seem to – you know, lose focus in the middle part of the year, like they do last year, and turn it on in December. And I think as long as they see a path to getting in, I think they can, you know, they can sneak in.
All right. So the schedule game, you went for 10-6, but you would said, gun to your head, you would take the under at 9.5.
Gun to my head, the owner. Yeah, because you know, a couple of those games were real coin flips. But I like the Eagles. I like the team, but I don't. This is not the Super Bowl, you know, caliber team that they used to have.
Yeah, you know, I was shocked. Pro Football Focus gives the Eagles just a 33% chance of making the playoffs, and that to me is very, very low. You know, even if you think the Cowboys are the favorites in the division, right?
I was gonna say that for sure leans heavy on the Cowboys being an elite team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, New Orleans, San Francisco, Seattle, you know, let's say one of Green Bay or Minnesota, and then the Cowboys. But other than that, I guess Tampa. I mean, I'm not so high on Tampa, but a lot of people obviously are pretty high on Tampa, obviously because of the Brady stuff. But then, you know, the Rams are taking a step back. The Falcons haven't really made a lot of moves. And then there's a lot of teams at the bottom of the NFC that, you know, I don't see a way for the Bears to compete this year. The Giants and Washington, you know, you chalked that up as four wins. That's got to be four wins. So I think I'm surprised. I think that the Eagles, if they're not a playoff team, I think they're going to be a 9-7 playoff team, 9-7 team that just misses the playoffs. I haven't decided yet whether I would take the over or the under. I think, you know, 9.5 is I guess I'd probably take the under also just because I think 9 or even 8 is more likely than 11 just because, you know, the top of the NFC is pretty strong. But I'm surprised the Pro Football Focus is that low.
Yeah, it seems a bit low to me. I 33% in this division is crazy.
Yeah, why don't you give me – what's the percentage chance that the Eagles play all 16 games on their schedule this year?
I mean, listen, I love reading these stats that they post every couple of days, like 2,500 COVID tests, only 10 positive. There's only 10 players that are missing training camp right now because of COVID. I mean, you know.
Who opted out for this team other than at receiver? We talked about Goodwin already.
I think Goodwin was and was there somebody else? I think there was one other guy, a linebacker. I think there was a linebacker that opted out also. I forgot who. Jatavius Brown, the guy they got from the Chargers, opted out.
Okay. All right. So not too bad. You know, obviously compared to like teams like the Pats.
Right.
Do you have any other Philly sports takes for us? Is there any chance the Sixers come back against the Celtics here in the first round without Ben Simmons?
I hate their matchup with the Celtics. You know what? The reality is that Jason Tatum is a stud, and he's a closer, and he's got ice in his veins, and he's confident, and you need that in the playoffs. The Sixers, just look at this team. And Joel Embiid, nice player. I don't want him with the ball in his hands. There's 24 seconds left in the game. And last night, Alec Burks was the one taking that shot. It was absurd. And Tobias Harris is MIA. And you need a killer. You need a killer to win in the playoffs, and have it. They just don't have it, and it pains me so much to say that after all these years.
Yeah, and then the Phillies have had a really bad start to the season, right? Although they won a couple games in a row.
Well, the Phillies bullpen, I read a stat the other night, had 3 scoreless innings, which brought the team bullpen ERA down to 12.92.
Well, look, Washington's was like that at this point in last season, and look how it ended up for them.
Yeah, I mean, Harper's heating up, and the offense is looking pretty good. JT Realmuto is playing out of his mind, but if you need your starters to go 9 innings every night, you're not gonna win a lot of games.
Yeah, Zach Wheeler, I think, I've been paying attention to him because I really wanted him in the offseason.
Yeah, he's been good. Nola's been unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. After a hot 2018 and a not so great 2019, he's had a good bounce back season. So, do you expect this team to sneak in as like the 7 or the 8 in the NL?
Not the way it looks now, but hopefully things heat up. I mean, obviously you saw the other night with San Francisco. A lot of teams have bad bullpens right now.
Yeah.
But this is bad. This is real bad.
I think the key is in baseball this year, you want to get a nice little winning streak going and then just hope your whole team gets COVID and you miss the next month of the season. Like, you know, the Cardinals have played like 10 games so far, but if it goes by winning percentage, they might make the playoffs at like 8-8 or something like that.
Yeah. It's actually unfair because now the Cardinals have to play like 27 doubleheaders. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know. Although I hate the 7-inning doubleheader. It really drives me. I also don't understand the logic behind it because, you know, once the players are there, just let them play, right? I guess it's because you don't want to tax bullpens too much.
Right, because a lot of these guys could potentially be playing 36 innings over 2 days.
Yeah, so expand rosters back to 30, you know. Make it 35, who cares? You know, bring in, you know, 20-man pitching stats. Just I hate the Twins had one of those doubleheader things on Saturday, and they had a pair of 4-2 games against the Royals, and it's just you're playing a garbage team like the Royals, and you have complete confidence that you're going to come back in the eighth or ninth inning, but then all of a sudden in the sixth inning, you're like, oh, we have four outs left, and this game is over. And,
you know, let me ask you a question about the Twins.
Yeah,
are we gonna look back in like 5 years from now and find out that Nelson Cruz took every possible steroid on Earth?
Yeah, probably. I don't care. I don't care at all. But yeah, I'm pro steroids. But yeah, it's insane. Like last year, he had like the greatest 40-year-old season, almost like I think the fourth or third best in the history of the game. And this year, he's significantly better than that. So
he's a threat to hit a home run every time he comes up to bat, and he's so old.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. He's such a joy to watch, Boomstick. So yeah, I don't really care. Whatever they're pumping in his veins, give me some of that. Because we had a debate on a previous episode. I don't remember which team it was about. You know, some hot take guy on Twitter was ranking like the most difficult things to do in sports for a non-athlete, and he thought that hitting a home run was much much easier than scoring a goal in the NHL, which is insane.
It's Elliot Shore Parks. He's the Philly guy,
right? Yeah.
Yeah,
that take, and I think we've been bombed by now, but that take is completely insane. Hitting a home run against a pitcher who's trying to get you out is the most impossible thing for a non-athlete to do. It's impossible.
After the Sixers choked away in the fourth quarter last night, somebody was tweeting they should have run plays for Elliot Shore Parks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously anybody could, you know, hit an open jumper in the NBA, you know, but yeah, it's impossible to hit a home run. Except for Nelson Cruz, who's 41 years old and does it every night. So, all right, Shamir, thank you so much for joining us yet again. You can go back to your vacation in Long Island, and we'll see you at our fantasy draft, hopefully, in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. 2:00 in the afternoon.